listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth. Truth, 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 truth.
Yes. Sounds like somebody's in the shower. Are you taking a shower, James?
No, I don't think that's coming from my end.
Okay, somebody's done with their shower. All right. Okay, so your website is jamesperloff.com. Now, the first hour, my internet went down. It was down for like 15 minutes. If that occurs, just keep talking. I don't know what's going on today, but it was down and it was off. But anyway, you are the author of this a new book, COVID-19 and the Agendas to Come, Red Pilled, and it was paperback, came out in August, and then all of a sudden, bang, it was Amazon no longer decided to carry it. So, but being the person you are, you thought, well, I'm just going to work around that and I'm going to have the book out anyway. So tell us what occurred and I'm just now coming back from being offline. So, I'm going to find your book here. So anyway, tell us what you did, what you had to do.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I'm just kind of curious because I wasn't listening in the first hour. Did you have another guest on?
I did. I had Greg Felton, who wrote SARS-CoV-2, Contagion, Collusion, Corruption. And bless his heart, when my computer died, he just carried on. So it was... It was interesting, mm-hmm. but you're taking a different tack. You're talking about things in a different way. You're both talking about a similar situation, but different. Okay.
Sure, and I'm not quite sure in the ways that mine would differ from his specifically, but you and I actually did a show on this before the censorship, and so I'm going to focus on
right.
The censorship, but I should probably first just explain what my book is. It's designed to be a pretty comprehensive look at what's going on with COVID, and it started out as a blog post in April, and I kept adding information as the official story got debunked, more information would come out, more doctors would speak up. And I kept expanding the post, but that made the post kind of imbalanced, and it was hard for people coming back to tell what material was new and what
right.
material was old. And I said, you know what, I gotta turn this into a book. We need a book on this topic. So I worked flat out from late May when I made the decision to do the book until, August the 20th when I uploaded it onto Amazon. So almost 3 months, but I made it into a 27 chapter book, but the chapters are relatively short, at an average of about 6 pages.
Mm-hmm.
I set out to make sure that everything was documented because, you know, the first words out of somebody's mouth when you contradict the official story is, well, isn't that fake news? You know, has that been fact checked? Where does that information come from? So everything I say, every stat, every quote is documented. And in the ebook, you can click right on the hyperlink and go instantly
right.
to the source. So there's uses for both the paperback and the ebook, but
right. And thank you so much for the ebook. It's wonderful. I love to be able to click on something and go to the source. It's great. I love your book.
Oh, thank you very much. Wish we were talking about some other topics interesting to us. We've talked about over the years, but anyway, for the COVID, I broke the book into 5 parts. The first part's on the lockdown, and I talk about what it's done to our economy, to our health, to our civil liberties, and I quote a lot of very eminent medical specialists from around the world, a variety of disciplines, who say the lockdown is absolutely not necessary. And I also have a chapter on social distancing and masks and why neither is scientifically supported. And that's the lockdown section. Then the next section is called The Methodology of Panic. And I put COVID in perspective and compare it to other pandemics that were even worse and we didn't go into lockdown, right? And I talk about fake news stories that appeared in the mainstream media. Yeah, they do fake news. And I have several chapters of how they inflated the death rates. One was the original modeling done by Neil Ferguson at Imperial College. And then, of course, you had them conflating COVID with other diseases. And it was eventually revealed that the high death rate in Italy was simply more than 99% of those people. And this is according to Bloomberg's investigation, were
had comorbidities. They were old.
Yeah, they were old. Average death and from COVID in Italy was 79.5 years old, and more than 90% had other diseases, advanced lung disease, cancer, etc.
Right.
And then another chapter's on the death certificate controversy and how the CDC is telling people, doctors, that they can just write COVID if they assume, they use that word assume, that it was COVID. And, you know, Deborah Birx, the response coordinator, has confirmed that the CDC counts it as a COVID death if you die from something else and you're like you're in hospice or something and you die of cancer, but you happen to test for positive for COVID, that's a COVID death. And the other thing, the way they really did bring up the actual death rate was by putting sick patients into nursing homes. And of course, as you know, I'm a registered nurse,
right.
A 45-year nurse. I retired last year before COVID hit, but most of my career was spent in, as a medical surgical nurse, but I also worked occasionally in nursing homes. And I can tell you that the protocol when you have a sick patient in a nursing home is to send them immediately to the hospital. Normally, so they can be worked up and diagnosed for what's causing their fever. But you don't take sick patients and put them into a nursing home where you have non-sick patients who suddenly are very vulnerable because they're all elderly. And that killed Cuomo and other governors, killed thousands of people that way. And then the next chapter is on the accuracy of testing, which the most famous of which is the PCR test. Then the third section is about theories about COVID-19, what it really is, and I have the mainstream theory, a chapter on that, and then I have a theory, a bioweapons theory, you know, Luc Montagnier, who got the Nobel Prize for discovering the HIV virus, says this is definitely a bioweapon. He says it can only be made in a lab. You need molecular tools, he says. And there's several others, Meryl Nass and Dr. Francis Boyle and others, who I quote.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a chapter on the predictors of this whole, you know, Event 201 and Crimson Contagion and the movie Pandemic and the fact that the Contact Tracing Act, HR 6666, was worked out before Wuhan began. Okay. And then I got one on the 5G theory, and I quote people in alt media who are both for and against that, but I feel that it's interesting that 5G has not been slowed down by COVID. You'd think it would be, but they're working at rocket speed, no pun intended, to get those satellites up there and inundate the planet with 5G. And there's a lot of questions about what that would do to our health. Then I have another chapter summarizing some of the other theories, including Andrew Kaufman's exosome theory, Zach Bush, Stephanie Seneff, who you've interviewed.
Oh, right, yes.
And then the next of the five sections is on the deep state's end game. So I have a chapter on population reduction, one just on Bill Gates and all the bad things he's done, and there's quite a few. Another chapter on the global vaccine, which we're seeing launched now. Another one called 8 Reasons Why We Don't Need a COVID Vaccine, and that's not even including hydroxychloroquine, which gets a chapter all of its own. And then I have a chapter on global ID, a chapter on the cashless society and the Great Reset, and a chapter on contact tracing and how that would create a surveillance state. And then the last section of the book is on 26 chapters on possible scenarios that could unfold in the future. And the final chapter is called Hope and Encouragement, where I talk about how there's a great awakening taking place in spite of all that's going on. So that's the book in a nutshell. And I wanted to give people a resource that they could go to when they're confronting hostile family members and hostile MDs and hostile coworkers. And so I got it onto Amazon, August the 20th, and it became a bestseller. It was number 254 of all Amazon books on day two.
Wow.
And that is thanks to Sean of SDT Report, who is now gone with his 625,000 subscribers, but he did an 8-minute interview with me, which launched the book, and it stayed for a long time. It was often number one on Amazon. It had over 50 ratings, 92% 5-star, 8% 4-star, and nobody gave it 1, 2, or 3 stars. And then I said, I gotta make this to an ebook, right? I gotta make it to a Kindle book. So I worked flat out with a top-notch digital conversion company for 4 days. I made sure that all my hyperlinks were working. And the evening before I was gonna launch it onto Amazon Kindle, I got an email from Amazon saying they were removing it because you didn't specify your international rights. Now this is ridiculous.
Why?
Because you can't launch a book on Amazon. This is what they call KDP. Kindle Direct Publishing, they make you go through steps, including specifying your rights. So this was untrue, and I have a screenshot that shows that I specified my rights. But I was trying to correct that according to their own instructions. When 2 hours later, I got a second email. Now they gave a completely different reason for removing the book. They were banning it permanently because I had violated their content guidelines. Now, they didn't say what content guidelines were that I'd violated, and nobody signed these emails. They remained anonymous, preferred not to say, not even a first name, you know. And so I wrote back and said, so I said, so everything on the book is documented. It doesn't advocate pornography or violence or anything like that. So
oh, it's okay if you have pornography, I think. I don't know that from a personal level, but you just wrote too many truths, and they will take things up that they have censored, my trilogy. I had a trilogy and they just took it off. They didn't even tell me. They just arbitrarily took it off after it had been on Amazon for a couple of years. Well, 3 years, 4 years. I guess, if people complain, so you have to ask yourself, well, gosh, who could have complained about your book? I'm sure a lot of people had reason to complain.
A lot of people have complained to Jeff Bezos about the removal of my book, and I'm sure many did. By the way, didn't they take – you have a 3-part series on the ruling elite, and didn't they take out the second book of the three, which kind of makes it very difficult for people, isn't that? Have they taken all three away now?
What they did was – they initially took away the second book, which was The Zionist Seizure of World Power, because of the title, probably. They did that quite some time ago. And then they erased about 100 reviews on the other books, and they took off the paperback and the hardcover copies, and the only ones that remain are the Kindle copies of book one and book three. With no reviews.
That's a big help.
Yeah, a big help.
Well, you can see what happened is that this is the plan all along. The plan from the beginning was for Amazon to establish a monopoly on the book market, wipe out the small competitors, and then weaponize Amazon against the First Amendment. And that was the intention all along.
I think you're right.
Yeah. Amazon is not there for profit. Amazon is there to get rid of small businesses, just like the lockdowns.
Right.
But in my case, I had anticipated the probably of censorship. Now, the book had sold, I don't know if I mentioned, it sold 3,500 copies on Amazon in less than 2 months. So they weren't taking it down because the customers didn't like it.
Right. They took it down because they did like it.
Yeah. And so I had anticipated this. So I'd already ordered a printing of my own, which arrived about 4 days after the ban went into effect on Amazon. So I was ready for that, and having experience as a publisher, knowing how to invoice people and having boxes of all sizes, I was ready to go. And with Power of Prophecy, I was already selling it down in Texas, so I had a good distributor down there. And actually, this really backfired on Amazon, because Russia Today picked up the story of their censorship of my book, Global Research, Zero Hedge, American Free Press, which you have, and you have friends over there, and American Free Press now stocks the book. And one of the damages, though, that they did Amazon had been acting as the distributor to mainstream outlets. So when they took out the book, that removed it from Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Powell's Books, all the major distributors. But I was able to establish relationship with a mainstream distributor who gives it to Ingram, which is basically Ingram is who supplies everybody else.
Right.
And so now it's back at Books A Million, back at Barnes & Noble. And I threw really good news this week because I heard, you know, people in Canada saying that we can't get this book because, you know, it's prohibitive shipping costs. Well, now it's carried by Indigo, which is the largest Canadian bookseller. And really good news also was now anybody in the world could get it. This is, I got this information a week ago from the book depository in the UK, which believe it or not, they ship internationally for free, no charge, because they deal in volume and they slightly raise the base price of your book. But unfortunately, today I got some bad news, which is that due to the so-called second
wave
variation of the virus in the UK, the European Union will not allow books from the UK to come in. So you can't get it in places like the Netherlands, although you could a week ago. But right now you can't. They say it's temporary. Yes, I hope. But I think other parts of the world you can still get it shipped for free. Other, you know, you still get it in Ireland and you can still get it, you know, in, I think in Australia, Asia, other places like that.
Wow. That is, just those actions alone speak volumes.
And I've been, other people, you know, I'm obviously one of only many victims of censorship. You know, the big tree is off of, YouTube. And I had, interview Christmas Eve that was posted yesterday. Spiro Scoris. And, when 1 hour, he was banned by Twitter earlier this week for life. He had over 70,000 followers.
Right.
And he told me, and I think he said this on the online as well, that he'd been told by I know he said it online that they were going to take down his YouTube channel. Well, 1 hour after he posted the interview with me, it was gone. Now the interview lasts an hour, so they didn't have time to evaluate it. So somebody had already, my belief is somebody had already intercepted our communications in advance and they already had the plan to take down the interview, but, he's put it on BitChute and I have been actually I think it's correct to use the word inundated with emails requesting my free ebook version today, as well as people looking for the paperback.
I tweeted about the your interview. I tweeted your interview.
Thank you.
And it's amazing that really all the venues are controlled. The fact that they would take out Spiro, the fact that they get rid of a lot of people on Twitter. I'm surprised I'm still there.
Right, me too. And you know, people before you say, well, your Adam Green must be a shill because he still has a YouTube channel. Well, guess what? His YouTube channel is gone, you know. So they're just, apparently they're just, I guess they can't get rid of everybody at once, but it looks to me, Deanna, doesn't it look like they are planning to progressively eventually eliminate any alternative media in the long run?
That's what it looks absolutely. Like. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so important, and I gave kind of a spiel at the first part of the program today that we need to support RBN, increase our subscription rate, and really be supportive, because RBN's been around for quite some time, and hopefully it will continue to be around for a long time, because it is a place where we can talk about these things.
Right, you're not like YouTube where, you know, the, Susan Wojcicki can, push a button.
Right. Right, and that's what it is. It's just push a button and, bleh, there goes that one. Another one, not down the tubes. Yes, really.
Yeah, all these big, tech, of course, Susan Wojcicki used to work for Google. In fact, her sister was married to one of the founders of Google, so, although they're divorced now, but you can see it's basically, I wouldn't say it's a big happy family, but it is one big family.
Sure.
Limited number of individuals who are, you know, Zuckerberg and Bezos and the people that are running the system and controlling. They obviously developed these systems so that they could eventually control the flow of information.
Right, and that's what they're doing, for sure. Alrighty, we're going to a break, and we'll be right back with our guest.
Thoughts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good.
All righty, we are back. And our guest is James Perloff, and his website is jamesperloff.com. And just let me mention that I've been taking it for a year. Not that I thought that I needed it, but it was recommended by Dr. Suzanne Humphreys, who is the co-author of Dissolving Illusions, and it's called Quercetin. That's Quercetin. And I've been taking that, and I take zinc, and I take B vitamins and those kinds of things. And if I haven't been out in sunlight at least 20 minutes the previous day, then I take vitamin D, which is also, not only is it a vitamin, it is also a hormone that your body creates. So, as far as having to have a vaccine, it's totally unnecessary, just not necessary at all.
Absolutely right. And one of the interesting things about Bill Gates is, besides the fact that he has no medical training, no medical qualifications, is that, you know, I have never once seen Bill Gates, when he talks about the solution to the pandemic, I never once heard him say, you should lead a healthier lifestyle. You know, get exercise, get some fresh air, eat right, you know, take some vitamin C and D. You never hear Bill Gates say that. The only solution for him is to take these toxic vaccines that he's got seven factories that he's been working with. That's his only solution to health. You're very right. There are, I don't try to give personal advice in my book, but I do quote, like a study from Northwestern University that found that, there's a strong correlation between low vitamin D levels and COVID deaths. And, of course, doctors who have had, the success with hydroxychloroquine, and now we're hearing about ivermectin. Which is another, which, interestingly enough, is an anti-parasitic drug, which, hydroxychloroquine is an anti-malarial drug, which is parasitic, and that's caused some people to wonder if there is some kind of parasitic involvement with this disease. But in any event, leading a healthy lifestyle is really in building up your immune system, and there are certainly many doctors who agree with this, MDs, qualified MDs, unlike Bill Gates, who advocate that approach. Is keeping yourself healthy as a matter of preventing the disease.
Right. It was very interesting. I on Twitter today, there was an image of him, and it's an image that I've seen several times, of him administering a liquid, something liquid to a child in India.
Right.
And the caption was, he's practicing medicine without a license. He was the actual administrator of this vaccine or whatever it was. I think it was a polio vaccine.
Right.
And so he was, without a license. This guy is just, his father was in charge of Planned Parenthood in the Seattle area. His mother was associated with the Federal Reserve. If you look at their history, you have to question exactly what their objectives are. And it certainly seems to have something to do with depopulation.
Right. Most of our listeners, I'm sure, are familiar with this TED Talk where he spoke of if we did a really good job with healthcare and vaccines, we could lower the future world population by 10 to 15%.
Yes.
Of course, that's what he says publicly. I imagine privately he's more in keeping with Ted Turner, who said we need to reduce world population by 95%. And when you see these vaccines and how, the Bill Gates World Health Organization, put out a vaccine in Africa, which was a, tetanus vaccine, and they were targeting women of childbearing age with this vaccine, and they were giving them three doses, which is really unusual in America. Usually for a tetanus vaccine, you only get a shot every 10 years. So right. Doctors in Africa got suspicious, and they sent it to independent laboratories and confirmed it had a anti-HCG
sterilization.
Yeah, it was HCG is the hormone that allows women to ovulate, create eggs, and this formula that blocks that, according to Bobby Kennedy Jr., millions of women in Africa were sterilized by that vaccine, and of course this is undisclosed, so when the woman got it. So you have to wonder if with these COVID vaccines, what other undisclosed contents are in them? If they wouldn't tell the people in Africa, will they be any more honest with us here in America?
Of course not. They're dishonest people. They're going to lie to anybody that will accept their lies. Yes. They were doing that also on Native American reservations early on, maybe 20, 30 years ago, trying to sterilize people.
Yeah, it's interesting they start out with minorities, but, you know, they're also targeting the white race. I have to wonder if they started out with these poor, you know, indigenous people with the idea that they won't be wise to what's going on and we can experiment on them, but we'll eventually work our way up to the matrix to white people. I kind of have a feeling that is their plan.
Yes, quite a plan there. All righty, we will be right back. With our guest, James Perloff. His website is jamesperloff.com, and he is the author of a book that is titled, I'm scrolling up, COVID-19 and the Agendas to Come, Red-Pilled. I guess I'm just really fussy, but when people say a book is entitled, and then they give the title, entitled means special privileges. So it just proper use of language is really one of my pet peeves. Okay, I've said my piece on that. Okay. The book is titled, okay? James, are you there?
I am.
Okay. So where do you want to go from here? There's so many things that you can that we could discuss. The social distancing, the mass controversies, everything in your book is very, well, it's really, I don't know where you'd want to go. There's so much to it.
Well, one thing I wanted to get into, Deanna, was
Bill Gates. He is such a what?
Oh, I said one thing I wanted to get into. You were talking about the masks and the social distancing.
Right. Yes.
Have on my website. I have an updates page because I wanted to make sure that, you know, this book was printed on published on August the 20th. But new things break, and I wanted to make sure anything that's relevant. Breaking news like Reinhard Fulmich, you know, the German attorney is launching class action lawsuits against these lockdowns. I want to make sure that that information my readers had access to. So if they go to the updates page on my website, which is linked to both from the paperback and the ebook, they'll find innumerable updates right up to the present time. But one thing I wanted to just mention was the evidence against the lockdowns and the masks. You know, there's a report in the Daily Mail. I quoted the British press a lot in this book. I found that the Daily Mail and the Guardian and the Telegraph were a lot more forthcoming and willing to challenge the official story, challenge Bill Gates. The American press is pretty much muted. As far as the mainstream, occasionally, you know, Tucker Carlson or Laura Ingraham on Fox will have a mention good on it. But the UK press, forget the BBC and the Times, but some of the newspapers take it on. So the Daily Mail reports this, quote, experts cannot find a single child under 10 who has passed on coronavirus to an adult despite a huge trawl of data, end quote. Now, that's pretty interesting. You know, they're keeping kids out of school because they'll get sick and they'll pass it on to granny. Well, there's not a single case known of a kid passing it on to granny. And as a matter of fact, almost no children have died from COVID. If they did, it was from an underlying disease. I want to underscore something, of course, Deanna, that we don't know when they may launch what Bill Gates has been calling, snickeringly pandemic two. We don't know that they may do something like release a new bioweapon or ramp up 5G and really increase death rates. I don't know that, but as we speak now, it is not a threat and there's certainly no need to keep children out of school. But another thing that just came out was, and this was in the American Institute for Economic Research, is a study of COVID from China of 10 million people, and they could not find a single case where an asymptomatic person passed it on. And that is very, very important because even Dr. Fauci, I'm sure you've seen the quote where he says the driver of pandemics is always a symptomatic person. Well, that's correct. That is true in this case as well. And there are additional quotes I could give you. For example, Dr. Gerald Evans, epidemiologist at he's medical director of infection control at Kingston, Ontario Health Sciences Center. He says, quote, to get infected with this virus, you have to be in close contact with another person, and that contact has to be for a significant amount of time. It's not 10 or 15 minutes, it's hours, and it needs to be in a closed environment, a house, and in the environment, there has to be a significant amount of contamination, end quote. And, The Telegraph quoted Professors Carl Hannigan and Tom Jefferson from the University of Oxford, who examined 172 studies relevant to social distancing. They could not find a single study, not a single study that supported social distancing. And, you know, I know there's hypothetical models where they say, well, hypothetically, the germ could jump 6 feet, but do we have any actual observational studies in where disinfection has been passed on this way? And the answer is no. So you don't need the masks. If you're asymptomatic, you know, if you're asymptomatic and you have a fever and you're coughing, of course, just like any regular flu, you should be, you should keep yourself home in bed, drink some chicken soup and wait till your fever subsides before you head out again. But there is nothing about COVID that would indicate that it would, require social distancing and masks. Masks, as you know, Deanna, are very harmful. When you're breathing through a mask, depending on the type, you're breathing 17 to 18% atmospheric oxygen, whereas OSHA has specified that no worker should be forced to work in an atmosphere where the atmospheric level of oxygen is less than 19.5%. So these masks are actually a violation of federal law, federal regulations. They are very harmful. They cause you to rebreathe your carbon dioxide, to lower your oxygen levels. And I watched a short video the other day by a very angry MD who spoke about a four-year-old who wound up in the ER with a severe lung infection, and it was not from COVID. It was from rebreathing his own germs into his lung from wearing a mask all day. These are the people you're not hearing on CNN and on the mainstream media. But this is something I think is really important. There is no actual science. If Dr. Fauci and some talking heads will talk about it on the mainstream, but the actual science goes completely against it.
Well, even if you just use an oximeter on your finger,
right,
with and without the mask, I think that's pretty indicative of what you're breathing or you're not getting. And I have seen people pictures of people with sores and
right,
just awful. Oh my gosh, staph infections, all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about children not being in school or being isolated from their peers at school is just, I feel so bad because children become socialized They need that social activity with other children. That's part of school. That in fact is probably one of the benefits of having a government school. Although I pretty much believe in homeschooling.
Sure, absolutely.
Because of all the stuff that they learn through government schools. But even if you homeschool, which a lot of people have done for a very, very long time, you get together in social groups of other homeschoolers, just for the sociality of it. And so these children who don't understand what is going on, all of a sudden, I just feel really bad for them.
Yeah, it is disgusting. And I was talking to a red-pilled person about a month ago, and she said her nieces are in public school, and she said the only time they can take their mask off is when they're eating or they go to recess. The rest of the day, they have their mask on all day. And she said that at lunch, believe it or not, they have to sit in their own bubbles, and they're not allowed to talk at lunch. Can you imagine the psychological damage that is being done to young people? In fact, here's where the British press comes again. They report that recently 1,500 pediatricians wrote to the government begging for schools to be reopened because of the damage that is being done to a whole generation of children. But I have to mention something. My wife is from Taiwan, and Taiwan has a population of 24 million. At last check, they had 7 total deaths from COVID. And yet, Taiwan has never locked down. Schools are open. Businesses are open. The churches are open. There is no lockdown in Taiwan. And there's no social distancing because somebody made a joke. If you social distance in Taiwan, it's so crowded there that people would have to stand in the ocean. They had to stand out in the Pacific Ocean to social distance. So you have to wonder, how is it that Sweden, which has no lockdown, and Taiwan, which has no lockdown, why are they surviving so well? Why are their death rates so low if this this is mandatory? There's so much common sense that's being overlooked and not discussed in the mainstream. If people would just step outside that box. One of the big ones for me, I have a chapter called 8 Reasons Why We Don't Need a COVID Vaccine. That number one is, if you look at the survival rate for COVID, according to the CDC itself, which uses inflated death rates, the survival rate according to Stanford is much higher, but the CDC itself says the survival rate for COVID is 99.74%.
Right.
Now, and according to their own stats, when people broke it down and looked at people who didn't have comorbidities, if you are between the ages of 20 and 49 and you have no, underlying diseases, your chances of dying from COVID or your chances of surviving COVID are over 99.9%. So why are we locking down young people and telling them they can't go to work? The chances that they're going to die from COVID if they caught it are negligible. And somebody made a meme, which I thought was great. It was a weather forecast, and they said, if the weather forecast was chances of being sunny today are 99.9%, the chances of rain are less than 0.1%. Would you put up an umbrella and you put on your galoshes and wear a raincoat because of that 0.01% chance? No way. I mean, it is absurd. It does not begin to make sense that you would develop a warp speed vaccine without proper testing, with no animal trials, and give it to people and make it mandatory, something that has never been done before, by the way. All of these vaccines, whether it's AstraZeneca or Moderna or Pfizer, they all have mRNA. They're all altering your DNA. And this has never been tried on humans before. And what the hell are, pardon my language, but what are we doing? And it makes no sense for somebody that has such a high survival rate. Now, again, they may do something in the future to increase the actual death rates. I don't know what they may have in mind next, but they're just saying things, Deanna, on mainstream media and Dr. Fauci that make absolutely no sense. And all it would take would be somebody on mainstream media to point out the lack of logic, the illogic in what Bill Gates and Dr. Fauci are saying, and people would start to wake up. But because their faces are glued to television, where they only hear those mainstream narratives, and the intelligent questions are not being asked because the Gates Foundation is giving so much money to the mainstream media, people do not wake up unless they're talked to by somebody who is awake.
Right. Another question that I have is the test for COVID or for anything. For instance, if you have strep throat or something like that, when you go into the doctor tests your throat, but they're going to put swab your throat or the inside of your mouth. Mm-hmm. They're not going to stick a swab up your nose, right, just almost to your pituitary gland.
Right.
So what is that all about? Because that is just very suspicious to me, that they're not testing as they ordinarily have done for years.
You're absolutely right, and I just saw a terrific interview with a 30-year pediatrician. It's on BitChute, Dr. Larry Pilevsky.
And I looked at that. Very good.
And he talked about that, and he said, why are we, normally, I remember when I was working as a nurse, when we wanted to check if somebody had, what type of pneumonia they had, we'd have them cough sputum into a cup. And Dr. Zaleski points out that, normally you would put a swab in the person's nose, but you wouldn't stick it way back. Now, does a COVID-19 only harbor itself way back there next to the brain? I mean, that doesn't even make sense. And he had that same question. He says he doesn't know what they're doing. Now, some people said they're injecting you with the vaccine that way. I don't believe that's true because they wouldn't be using the vaccines if that was true. But is there something on those swabs, or are they collecting DNA specimens, or are they trying to harm your tissue back there? I don't really know what the purpose is, but it is, again, like so many other things, not in keeping with our standard practices. In standard practice, we never quarantine the healthy. Why are we doing things that go against medical protocols? Why have we changed the definition of herd immunity from immunity that's developed by people developing the disease to immunity coming from vaccines alone? And that's what the World Health Organization has done. It's just like Orwell's 1984, when they had the Newspeak dictionary, which would keep changing the definitions of words. And we're seeing that happen before our eyes, and it's very, very dangerous. And Dr. Pilevsky was very disappointed. He said that it used to be that he'd go on rounds in the morning, and I used to see this in the hospital, and they would talk about a patient and what their symptoms were and what their lab tests were and work them up. And now they just, if a person's got a fever, they're just writing it off as COVID. And one of the reasons for that, of course, and Ron Paul is pointing this out, is that hospitals are getting rewarded if they report a COVID case. There's a financial incentive now, and of course a lot of their non-COVID, so-called non-essential medical services have been canceled. Cancer workups and heart workups and things like that. So the only way they get money is to report COVID, and this is one of the things that's going on. And again, totally contrary to science, totally contrary to good medical practice, very, very disappointing to me and countless other medical professionals who are seeing what's going on.
Right. Right. I listened to that. I watched the whole interview that he did, and I thought, wow, that is really, really very interesting. Very interesting. So they do get what, $13,000?
Yeah, I think it's $13,000 is what Dr. Scott Jensen mentioned a few months ago. I don't know if there's a higher number now. But I was told by a book, we'll keep continuing on the other side. Yeah.
All righty. All righty, we are back with our guest, James Perloff. His website is jamesperloff.com, and we are talking about his book, COVID-19 and the Agendas to Come, Red Pilled. You were just starting to say something, and then you said you'd save it for after the break. Okay.
Sorry, my mind moved off that topic. There's enough to say about this. I know what I was going to say was that, it was when my book, first printing sold out, I was called by a a bookstore owner who wanted to see if he could get copies from me. And I did have, you know, a handful, and I was able to send him three, along with a couple of the books that he wanted. But he said that his sister was an RN, and said his sister had called BS on COVID from the beginning, and that she was threatened with being fired if she spoke out about it, and that her emails were being monitored by her boss. That's what he told me. So anyway, it's just another, you know, these confirmations that I encounter incidentally. I gave a copy of my book last week to my one of my former nursing directors. She looked through it and she said, you know what, I agree with everything that's in here, and I'm not taking the vaccine. So there are a lot of medical professionals who are against the official story, against the vaccine. And I've actually been hearing reports that in a number of hospitals, it's 70-80% are saying they are not going to take the vaccine. They don't want to be injected. They know that death rates are low, and they know that the risks are extremely high. The unknowns are extremely high. Nobody knows what the long-term effects are. Normally, they take at least 5 years to develop a vaccine. Now they've rushed it through at warp speed. Who knows what it's going to do, especially a type of vaccine that's never been used on humanity before, changing your DNA.
Yes, that is very, very alarming, and certainly something to. I'm anti-vaccine, which I've indicated in a book, but it should be a personal choice, because it's your body. In 1973, Roe v. Wade. Came to the conclusion that, okay, it's the woman's body. She has a right to say what happens to her body. And that was talking about a child that she was carrying. They didn't consider the child. They said, okay, it's her body. And I think that we should be able to use that same argument. It's my body. If I do not want to accept a vaccine, I should have that right to reject it. So I think that we need to play that card, that Roe v. Wade card, at this time.
Right. In fact, there's a meme of Bill Gates saying, your body, my choice.
Right. Yes. I love those memes. And there's several of them that are very, very good. It's just, who made him, who put him in charge? I know that he's got a lot of money. But are people that materialistic that all it takes is money to destroy other people? Are people that evil?
Or that compliant? Yeah, I've never seen Bill Gates actually challenged by
anyone
as to why he's in charge, even though he has no medical credentials.
Exactly. All righty, we will be right back. It's the top of the hour. We'll be right back.
Broadcasting Network.
Is James Perloff. His website is jamesperloff.com, and we're talking about his book, COVID-19 and the Agendas to Come, Red Pilled. And it is available as an ebook, and just have to visit his website. and it has five parts, and every part, it just a lot of really good stuff. Really good stuff. The 5G theory, you want to delve into that?
Yeah. Does people, I saw a conversation, and I cite it in my book, between Derek Broz, who's anti-5G, and James Corbett, and Broz felt that, and Corbett felt that 5G is not a factor. Broz was saying that, you know, they rolled out 5G in Houston, where he lived, and there was no COVID there, and there are other people in the anti-5G movement have spoken against it, that discredits the anti-5G activists. One thing, though, that occurs to me is that 5G can be dialed up to different frequencies, and it could be that in Houston, where Broz was living, they were using a very low frequency. But as you know, Shigeaki Hakasui, who was the president of the Harmonix Corporation, did an article back in 2001. He had a graphic and showed that when you dial it up to 60 gigahertz, 98% of electromagnetic frequencies are absorbed by oxygen. And people have raised the question, I mean, you'd really have to do tests on this, which we don't have the ability to do, that perhaps the reason people were seen dropping dead in Wuhan, and I know some people think those are crisis actors, but if they were really dying on the spot, that they were being hammered with these millimeter waves that are used in military crowd control weapons at 60 gigahertz, and they couldn't process the oxygen. As a matter of fact, one of the points that Dr. Zaleski was making, and that the pediatrician that we were talking about, he says that COVID seems much more like a blood disorder than a respiratory disorder. He says he'll be talking to somebody who's got COVID, and they're able to talk and breathe, or they don't have the classic respiratory symptoms like they're not congested, yet their blood oxygen levels are low. He says it's more like a blood disorder. And he said, how about the fact that they can't taste or smell? He said that zinc deficiency, again, this is not something that a respiratory virus would cause. It's more of a blood disorder. And he agrees with Dr. Coffin's analysis, basically, that these electron microscope pictures of elements of the COVID virus, which they apparently never have isolated it completely, that they see in the electron microscope are probably the exosomes exiting the cells, taking toxins out, which could be from various things. He's not sure what it would be in the interview he gives, but he says that electromagnetic frequencies would be one of the possibilities, you know, being hit with frequencies that the body cannot tolerate.
Right. I'm doing a big study on that. I have interviewed several people, mm-hmm. Including Dr. Samuel Milham, who states in his book, Dirty Electricity, that there were a lot of diseases that came about with the introduction of electricity.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so anyway, I'm doing this big, giant study on it. And but I've read most of those books, and the other thing that I wanted to bring up too is that there have been really, really bad issues with people dying from different things, and then they have discovered later on that there was a big, like, beriberi. That people who don't have enough of a particular vitamin, who are deficient in what they eat or what their body is able to take in, it will cause a lot of people to die. So I think that when you look at his history and see that and compare what has occurred previously, when you have large groups of people who die, that sometimes it isn't the reason that they initially suspect, that it wasn't a virus at all. It simply was they didn't have vitamin B or something of that nature. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's credible, and this is one of the reasons in my book I don't try to take any definite stand, but try to give voice to various people. You know, one of the mistakes I think we made in the 9/11 truth movement was that we tended to grab onto a theory about how the Twin Towers were destroyed or what happened to the airplanes. And I was guilty of this myself. We come up with a theory. We kind of hang on to it and defend it and repel theories that go against it. I think we really need to be very open, do this scientifically, take into consideration and with respect each view. And I think that certainly the case that can be made that we're not medically well in America. We have so many things that are poisonous between the fluoride, the chemtrails, the vaccines,
right,
the GMO, the glyphosate. You know, Dr. Stephanie Seneff, who mentioned you interviewed, I didn't hear that interview, but I know that she says that she thinks that glyphosate, airborne glyphosate, because they now have biofuels, are one of the reasons people are getting COVID is from breathing that in. So I think we need
absolutely.
We need to pay attention to these things. And you have definitely nutritional deficiencies, which we probably at an all-time high in this country, would certainly be making us much more susceptible to these kind of diseases. So, yeah, I'm very open to that type of explanation.
Right, and excuse me. One 9/11 researcher took it all the way to the Supreme Court, and the court pretty much said, "You have a death wish." And they agreed with this researcher, but nothing happened. And then when you look at how people got appointed to the Supreme Court, I interviewed some gentlemen not too long ago about the Vince Foster situation and the cover-up of that murder. And a lot of people thought, oh, Hillary had him knocked off. And that isn't the case at all. He was going to disclose something that would have been quite terrible. And the person that covered it up then got a seat on the Supreme Court, a lifetime seat on the Supreme Court, because of his cover-up. He covered everything up, made it all go away.
And was it revealed what the thing was Foster was going to reveal?
I think probably had something to do with pedophilia.
Okay. That would be one of the most likely things, I would think, given what we know with Jeffrey Epstein and Maxwell.
Yes,
and
yes.
Been going on with our government officials and British prime ministers and
yes,
people
and
at the BBC.
Princess Diana was also going to reveal some stuff, probably the very same thing. In fact, I listened to an interview about her by the person that took care of her, that went with her, was her aide. And she was going to reveal what was going on with Prince Andrew and the Epstein situation. And all of a sudden, she's gone, and they kept her in that tunnel when she could have been saved. They bled her out.
Right, and when did you ever hear of somebody in a car accident and the ambulance arrived and they waited 3 hours before they took them to the hospital? Have you ever heard of that happening before?
No, nope. That was planned. They bled her out, and so they silenced. That's how they silence people. They kill them. Oh, I guess you better be careful, huh?
Well, it's probably a good idea to be prudent. I also heard a theory on Princess Diana that, you know, she was engaged to a Muslim, and the report was that she actually was pregnant, and this was prior to the outbreak of all the Middle East wars, and Princess Diana, being the most photographed woman in the world, if she was photographed visiting suffering people in Palestine and other Arab countries, it could have created a major problem for the prosecution of the war and the betrayal of the Muslims in those countries the way that it happened. But I don't know if that was the true motive. These are things that we hear about and we try to evaluate their credibility. But I think
her aide said no.
No?
Okay. He didn't go with that. And she wasn't going to marry the guy. She spent time with him. She thought he was a nice person. But she actually had another friend that she, a long time friend, quote, lover, that she was coming back to. So, there wasn't, so there's all kinds of theories, I think, but the fact is she's dead. And the fact is that Vince Foster is dead. And the fact is that Prince Andrew, hasn't been arrested for pedophilia. And, you just have to kind of wonder about those things.
And Epstein isn't around, and Kerry Mullis, the founder of the PCR test, which says that you can't diagnose a disease with it, conveniently died last year.
Yes. Yes, he did die, or he was murdered. Because when you look at, okay, so what happened to security cameras? All of a sudden, they blanked out. The guards were nowhere. They fell asleep. Please. You know, he was either, he's either on a beach somewhere or he's dead. And then there's his, Ghislaine Maxwell, who was arrested. And then I don't watch TV, so I have no idea what's going on with that. Trump said, well, he wished her good luck. How do you wish somebody good luck when they have been instrumental in the sexual abuse of young women? I don't get that at all.
No, it would tend to suggest a degree of sympathy on Trump's part, and of course it's been mentioned that he traveled to Epstein Island, did he not?
He was really good friends with Epstein. Until 2008 with Epstein's first arrest. And that's what he said. He said that he was no fan. But before that, they partied together. In fact, Epstein is the one that introduced him to his Melania Trump, his wife.
Right. And of course, Epstein was also very good friends with Bill Gates, even after he was accused of sexual crimes.
Right, and Bill Gates the science director that Bill Gates used was a friend of Epstein's. All the ties are just so questionable, and so and there are pictures. It's not like I am making something up. And I'm sure you've seen the photos. So we have the Lolita Express, which Clinton was a frequent flyer on. Why are there no arrests of Bill Clinton? Why are all these people who were involved with Epstein, who went to his island, who went to his Manhattan mansion, why are they still running around? Why hasn't anything happened to them? So I think the pedophilia thing is really big.
I think so. Well, we know that the Illuminati, the people at the top, have always picked, this is their own documents, they've always selected, presidents and prime ministers who have dark secrets. We know that Woodrow Wilson had one that was used to blackmail him into picking a Supreme Court justice. Almost all of these people they put at the top have these blackmail secrets that can be revealed to keep them in line. It's a leash on them. It's a tool of control. That's why men of true integrity like Ron Paul do not get to become president.
Right. Right. Yeah, so it's just all very, very interesting. And of course, I think that they pick people to become government leaders because they can manipulate them and get them to do, they have something on them.
Absolutely. So. It's a tool of control.
Sure. So, okay, back to your book. We got off topic a little bit. Oh, well, not really. Not really. It's kind of still on topic. About this 5G thing, getting back to that, we are living on an electromagnetic earth. We have always lived on an electromagnetic earth. And we should be able, if we are healthy, we should be able to withstand electromagnetic frequencies. However, there are some people that are impacted by them and some people that aren't. So you have to determine, okay, what is the person who is not impacted by them doing or not doing? And we know that when a house is built, that the construction worker sinks a very, very deep pole into the ground to ground the house so that you don't get shocked. If your toaster, something happens to your toaster, you're not going to get shocked. Also, you have, used to be that houses were created with a two-prong cord. Mm-hmm. And that's no longer the case. Now you have to have a three-prong cord, because of the grounding situation. So there are some people that are going to be impacted by electromagnetic frequencies and some that aren't. I suggest, and I'm doing a big study on this, I suggest that it's in the individual who may not be grounded properly, whose own electromagnetic field, the aura, other things that are energetically connected with this person are not in tune. In other words, if some people are affected and some people aren't, you have to figure out, okay, what's the difference between these two people?
Right. Well, it could be genetic or it could be something to do with their environment, or mm-hmm. their personal health history. That's a great question. But, I wouldn't be surprised if shifts in the way, electrification is done, which I know not much about, would be related to these New World Order plans, because it seems that they've, penetrated almost every venue of, our life, including the infrastructure of the nature, the nation. You know, I think we have a minute left. I had an interesting chat with a pediatric nurse and, retired. And do you remember how that they demanded that lead paint be removed from?
Yes. And then you also said, that you had never heard, or this nurse had never heard of any child or never treated any child that ate a piece of lead paint.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like kids were just going around eating paint, you know, but they insisted to take it out. Now, she said she'd never encountered one case in her career as a pediatric nurse
right.
of a child eating paint. And she said her theory was, and it's just a theory, but the fact is that lead protects against radiation. You know, you wear lead aprons when you go to
right.
an x-ray room. And she
right.
believed that lead was protecting houses from radiation. I thought that was a pretty
right.
interesting theory and one that at least merits some investigation.
Okay, let's talk about that when we come back. We'll be right back.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead. Change the bad to good.
All righty, we are back, and our guest is James Perloff. His website is jamesperloff.com, and we were talking about lead paint. And I had a very lengthy discussion with Dr. Judy Wood about that particular subject and about paint on homes. And she concluded that the reason that they outlawed lead paint was so that they could use radiation.
It makes sense to me, Deanna, because
yeah.
I don't think the average kid would just go eat paint.
And even if they did, even if they did, the stomach, the things that you take into your body go through your digestion, they go out. It's like mercury. If you jab a vaccine into your bloodstream with mercury, then it will go to your brain blood barrier, if it's open, and go in there. But if you eat fish that has mercury, it will pass through your body. There's ethyl mercury and methyl mercury. Okay, so there's two different kinds. So if you eat lead paint, I don't think it's going to hurt you.
Yeah, I think so many things we learned, Deanna, that we didn't understand before, there was a reason for, that was more sinister than what we're being told. We see now how little concern there really is by public officials for the health and safety. Somebody made a meme the other day. If you had $10 million, what would you do with it? Would you give it to the people? Would you fix the roads? Would you repair Flint's water? Or would you spend it on gender studies in Pakistan? Well, they picked gender studies in Pakistan. You know, they really don't care about our health, and that they haven't cared about it for a long time. So we can see the nonsense of imposing these lockdowns, which are multiple times more harmful than COVID. Which I should mention, COVID's not even as harmful as the Asian flu, which hit in 57 when I was a child. I got a flu shot for it from the doctor up the street. That killed over a million people, and when the world population was only 2.8 billion, a little bit more than a third of what it is now. So it was like 3 million people dying today, but nobody spoke of masks or social distancing or locking down the economy. Nobody would have dreamed of it. We're seeing this dystopian Orwellian culture where we're being told 2 + 2 = 5.
I agree. Yes, I totally agree with you. The other thing too that I that I recently ran into was a situation that John D. Trump, who is the uncle of Donald Trump, was a professor at MIT. And when Nikola Tesla died, they asked John D. Trump to come in and evaluate the research. And basically what John D. Trump said was, nothing to see here. And so we're talking Tesla, who believes that energy should be available for free to everybody, mm-hmm. versus Edison, who with his cronies decided to harness that energy and sell it. That is the same thing that they have done with the radio waves. See, these frequencies, radio frequencies, energy frequencies, that's, what are they going to do next? Harness oxygen and sell it to us? So you have to question, okay, if they are taking something that should be free and charging us for it, could they also use that energy for very, very bad purposes? And I believe they can, and they have in the Middle East. If you look at the highway of death associated with the first Gulf War, there are cars on the highway of death, maybe it's 2001, that look exactly like the cars associated with 9/11. And so you can control crowds with energy. It's just very interesting, all of this stuff to me. I'm studying energy medicine. I'm in my second year, and I'm learning quite a lot about how energy works with a person's body. It's just really interesting.
Well, Ed, there's a great need for that because we already know that 4G, let alone 5G, causes cancer and DNA damage, heart arrhythmias, and, you know, as a registered nurse, I had a 24-year-old patient who died of a brain tumor. He's always holding his cell phone on the right side of his head. And Ted Kennedy died of a brain tumor on the right side of his head, always holding his cell phone there. But John McCain was left-handed, held his cell phone on the left side of his head, and developed all kinds of tumors there. There's a great need for people developing skills like yours, where they can start to recognize the symptoms that are caused by these kind of environmental factors.
And it also depends on, okay, if you're talking to whoever you're talking to, if you're talking to somebody, a child that's making you laugh and you're receptive and you're happy, then you might not be affected by that phone call. But if you're listening to some horrible radio program, or you're listening to some bad news, or you're delivering bad news, that could have a totally different effect. It's the recipient of the energy rather than the producer of the energy. Like the cell phone produces a radio, you know, it produces frequencies. So you have to look at the recipient. Okay, we'll be right back.
We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony.
All righty, we are back with our guest. Our guest is James Perloff. His website is jamesperloff.com. And we do have some callers. Would you like to take some calls?
Like to take some calls, and also in the time we have left, Dan, I'd like to talk a little bit more about censorship related to me and my book, and also I want to make sure people know how they can get both the paperback and free ebook versions of the book. I just want
absolutely.
We reinvented the phone calls first, but I want to make sure we do touch that. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Alrighty, we have Dave in New York. Dave.
Yes, hello. It's very, very interesting. I think it starts with you and me. It starts with all of us. I think that's a very good line. I wanted to talk to Mr. Perloff. I was impressed with him last time I heard him on your show. Regarding 5G and oxygen and, it was my conclusion that the use of the 5G in Wuhan could have driven lots of people into the hospital to be mixed with perhaps COVID-contaminated infected people and greatly spread the contamination and also weakened them. It's clear, I've got a background in photochemistry, so the – hold on a second. No. Yeah. Excuse me.
No, leave me alone. I'm on the phone.
Yeah, they didn't realize on the national the show here. The oxygen, oxygen absorptivity due to 5G occurs at 60 gigahertz frequency, and it's very strong. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Deanna? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so. The question is how much of that 5G actually gets to a person's body and gets to the oxygen that's in their system, or maybe the oxygen that's bound to hemoglobin. And if it was bound to hemoglobin, the frequency should be slightly shifted due to the binding or the absorption frequency. So what
it
has to be done is
on the recipient's body, because if okay, a house has to be grounded. A person has to be grounded. It's up to the recipient, because the same thing, you could be in a room and get the same frequencies, and some people can get sick and some people don't get sick. It has to do with the contraction of your blood-brain barrier, because your home, if you're hormonal, if your adrenals are very stressed out, your brain is going to be open, and you will be affected by frequencies. If it's closed, you're not going to be. It's just like when people get, two people could get the very same vaccine. One will get sick, one won't. It has to do with the recipient. Does that answer anything?
Well, the way I view it is that the oxygen would have to absorb the the 5G frequency. And this occurs through the air. It just goes straight to the oxygen molecule or the bound oxygen molecule. So anyway,
It depends on your hormonal, how your own body is handling hormones, how you're handling stress. If you're stressed out, you're not going to be in as good a shape as somebody who is calm, collected, and not stressed out. Because when you're stressed out, that blood-brain barrier is open. You're stressed. Yeah. This would take 3 hours to explain. But Dave, we do need to move on.
I understand that.
Because we're running out of time. Yes. Okay, Brian in Washington. Brian, quick.
So the comment that the COVID has not been, what is the term?
Proven?
Isolated.
Okay.
So we're going to put in your chat room, maybe not right away, but you and the guest, I think, should check, a Greg Quiones, who's big involved in this, said that statement is a honey trap. So it's going to discredit researchers because they could very well have already isolated it. And that,
okay.
I just wanted to alert you to that. Greg would love an interview because he's trying to drum up some doctors to get together to battle this along with attorneys. And okay. He needs a lot of financial support. The other thing is, Deanna, I had a 13-year-old daughter that died of childhood leukemia. We lived half a block from high-voltage power lines.
Mm-hmm.
She was conceived right at the Chernobyl accident time. Mm-hmm. My mother died of Parkinson's. These people, I think we can't just protect ourselves by being consciously grounded from this.
No,
we need to eliminate.
That is a very simple answer. I said initially it would take 3 hours to really explain it. So we can't cover it now. And it's terrible, and my sympathies to you.
But
we do need to move on. But thank you for your phone call. Appreciate it. Okay, let's take Dr. Kelly really quick in California. Dr. Kelly, quick.
I wanted to thank you so much for, you just put a big equation together for me that the zinc depletion is a result of the copper toxicity, as Sam Milham discussed in his book, and there are thousands of functions that the zinc is dependent upon, meaning taste and smell. Hydrochloric acid is a zinc-dependent system, and people lose their taste for meat when this zinc depletion takes place, and it's also 90% of it is tied up in the blood buffer system. And so thank you so much again for your work. You put the, you know, you just sent the spark in the brain, and thank you for your work, both of you. Tremendous interview again, and God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Kelly. In fact, I was just quoting Dr. Zaleski on the role of zinc in the smell and taste and the possible factor of this being a blood disorder as opposed to a respiratory disorder. I'm learning all the time on this, and you probably know quite a bit more than I do about several aspects of this, but thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. Okay. Should we take Chris in Florida, and then we'll get back to your book. Chris, real quick.
Well, a few points. Trump back in July, when he was asked about Ghislaine Maxwell, he said, quote, "I just wish her well." You look online and see that quote. And when it comes to mandatory vaccination, a lot of people on both sides seem to think falsely that the 1905 Supreme Court case, Jacobson v. Massachusetts, allowed for mandatory vaccination when it didn't. it, as you probably know, it only allowed for a $5 fine in lieu of vaccination of Jacobson.
Right.
Meaning his right to bodily autonomy was intact, so he had liberty for a fee. And I don't agree with the principle of stare decisis, but, you know, that was started with the Supreme Court case of Marbury versus Madison, 1803, because each set of circumstances is unique and a jury should have the chance to deliberate. But for those who disagree and interpret or misinterpret Jacobson v. Massachusetts or even expand its meaning to other areas like mandated mask wearing, it should be informed of other cases like Miller v. U.S. 1939 quote says, there can be no sanction or penalty imposed upon one because of this exercise of constitutional right. And another quote from Miranda v. Arizona in 1966, the claim and exercise of a constitutional right cannot be converted into a crime. So that nullifies Jacobson v. Massachusetts in 1905, and there are other several other Supreme Court cases that say that basically a right can't be converted into a crime or penalized. And when it comes to you're talking about the World Health Organization changing the definition of herd immunity, well, they had it half wrong, half right in the first place, but now they have it all wrong. Dr. Arthur W. Hedrick, the health officer in Chicago, I'm just quoting from what I'll put in your chat room after my call here, is an article from The Vaccine Reaction, The Theory of Herd Immunity Has Nothing to Do with Vaccination, where Dr. Hedrick, health officer in Chicago, said that during the 1900 and 1930 outbreaks of measles in Boston, Massachusetts, appeared to be suppressed when 68% of the children contracted the virus. And later in the 1930s, Hedrick observed that after 55% of the child population in Baltimore, Maryland, contracted measles, the rest of the city's population appeared to be immune to the disease. I'm just quoting from that article. So that was long before the measles vaccines, and now they, of course, the measles vaccines require booster shots, which the so-called immunity is waning. Of course, if you have lifelong or at least much longer-term immunity when you get it, when you contract it.
Chris, I think I'm gonna cut you loose because I want to give James the opportunity to finish his thoughts. So I appreciate your phone call and your information. That was very good. Thank you so much. Okay. Take care. All righty. Let's get back to your book.
Well, first of all, I just want to say I think we had some great phone calls in there.
Oh, absolutely.
From several people. And, you know, I want to thank, for example, Chris for raising some legal points, which we may need.
Exactly.
As she heard Alan Dershowitz saying that
yes,
the Constitution gives the government police power to plunge a needle into someone.
It doesn't.
So
he was a frequent flyer on the
Lolita Express.
Yeah. He shouldn't be offering anybody opinion of anything. He should be under arrest. Okay.
Those are great points about Jacobson versus Cambridge, Massachusetts, and
yes,
he was only required to pay a $5 fine, which might be $100 or so today. I'd be happy to pay the fine myself to avoid a vaccination.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, but regarding the book, and I hate to cut some of those people off because I think
they're making
some excellent points. I wanted to mention how to get the book. Again, it's 27 chapters that cover almost every point, every major aspect of COVID, although, the theoretical aspects of what COVID is still open. And I quoted Dr. Zaleski about that. This is somebody who's come out since the book was published. But if you like to buy a copy of COVID-19, The Agenda is to Come Red-Pilled, the first places I'll recommend are, your friends at AFP, American Free Press, Deanna. They're stocking the book, and they've ordered it several times. Tex Mars, his Power of Prophecy, has been the bestseller for this book, even before the Amazon ban.
Is a great source. I highly recommend buying books from them, Power of Prophecy.
They probably sold about 2,000 copies of the book. I don't know. I haven't go back and check the records, but they've been great sellers. But if people don't go to Power of Prophecy or American Free Press, again, you can get it from Barnes & Noble Books, A Million Pals, or any, just your local bookstore. If you're connected to Ingram, in which almost all bookstores are, you can buy it. Also, if you're up in Canada, you can now get it through Indigo. And I mentioned Book Depository in the UK will ship worldwide for free, and they list the book. But unfortunately, they just came out with a rule. They can't ship to the mainland because of the supposed new variation in the virus. I will ship the book myself, personally. If people order in bulk, you know, three or more copies, you know, the book retails for $15.95. If you buy five, it drops to $11.95, $10, $20, it keeps dropping. If you buy a full case of 30, it drops to $8.50 a copy. This is for people who want to hand out copies to friends, family, and public officials. So I'll ship in bulk, and that's on my website, jamesperleff.com. But I also wanted to mention that you can get the e-book for free. When Amazon wouldn't let me put it on Amazon Kindle, I said I got to do something with this. So I made it into both a Mobi book, which uploads onto a Kindle, or an EPUB, which loads onto many devices. And then a reader of mine kindly converted it into a PDF. And it's not an ordinary PDF. Every hyperlink works internally.
Yes.
And externally. So you can just click on a source or a video, and it'll take you right to the article in The Guardian or the Bill Gates video, and you can watch it or read it. Just contact me at jamesperloff.com. But this brings up some censorship issues. My website is totally blocked by Facebook since the Amazon ban. You cannot mention any article. If you mention my website, in a message, Facebook Messenger will block it. This is brand new. I mean, some of my old posts from years ago had thousands of Facebook shares. Now they're all reset to zero. And you try to share a poster on the Korean War 6 years ago, Facebook blocks it as abusive. It's crazy.
Oh my gosh.
But Facebook's in, and I've never been on Facebook. I've never belonged to Facebook. You know? But also, another thing that's happened is, I sent people copies of the ebook, and they thought they never got it. It turned out it went into a spam folder. Some email systems are designating emails for me as spam. And I've heard people, they said, I asked for the book a month ago. I just found it in my spam folder. And so I put this on my contact form. Watch, if you don't hear from me, look at your spam folder and see if it's there. And the other thing that happened was really weird was about a month ago, I did some promo on the free ebook. And I said, you know, contact me. I'll send you the book in PDF, Mobi or EPUB. And I didn't hear from a single person. I thought this was weird. And I looked at my website statistics, and it showed dozens of people every day were going to my contact form. And realized somebody was blocking communications from my contact form on my website to me. And so now I've got on my contact form, I wrote, use this email address, write to me directly. Now, some people still get a contact form, use the contact form, and it gets through to me. But I'm just letting people know there are they're trying to use cyber methods to prevent the book
from
getting
out. Yeah. That tells you just about everything that you want to know about what you've said. Seriously. If people are blocking you, and it's not just one entity, it appears that it's several, they don't want your book out there.
Yeah, the Amazon book went down the same day as they took out STT Report and other sites, and there was a massive censorship campaign. I guess we have a short break and then another short segment. Right?
Yes.
Did I hear Barbara music? Was that my imagination? Okay.
Here it comes. Back with our guest, James Perloff. His website is jamesperloff.com, and we have 3 minutes.
Yeah, Dan, I just wanted to mention that I mentioned some of the censorship actions like Facebook blocking me. One of the things I'm doing, cause I wanted to mention that just as Amazon banned my book, I countered that by printing my own version. And when they cut off distribution, I got my own distributor. Well, as far as Facebook goes, I haven't done this nearly enough, but I've started to convert some of the web pages into what they call tiny URLs, which doesn't say jamesperloff.com on it. It doesn't have the long URL. and Facebook can't recognize that. And that's one way to share it on Facebook, a post on Facebook without Facebook knowing it. And I'm also, as far as the blocks they put on between my contact form and me, I mean, it looks like the block is off right now. I'm getting a lot of messages off the contact form, but I'm also advising people to use direct email anyway. I'm also working with tech specialists to fortify my website and doing whatever I can to try to carry on this fight against the censorship. Those are technical issues, but the main issue is the matter of truth. I again want to acknowledge the callers. I thought some of the callers today had some great insights, and it would have been nice to have them on if we had more time to have them on for some more of their insights. So I appreciate the fact that RBN and your show have a very intelligent listening audience.
We do. We have very good listeners, very astute people, and I really do appreciate them. I really do. It's amazing. And you have to attribute a lot of that to RBN, and the hosts that they have on, and they've been on for a long time. They've been around for a long time. And so support is very much appreciated.
Well, Deanna, you and I have had a lot of different conversations than this over the years, you know. Nobody's talking about COVID a year ago. It's funny. But we've had great discussions about World War II. And if I'm my brothers, I'd be talking to you about things like Leon Degrelle on the Eastern Front, Rudolf Hess flying to England with a peace plan on May the 10th, 1941. But, you know, those things have all kind of gone by the boards because of the imminent dangers we're facing from these lockdowns and mask wearings and vaccines. So we're kind of, frontline battle right now, and we kind of have to, although we learn a lot from history and there are examples that bear on COVID, we kind of have to lose sight of the specifics sometimes in order to concentrate on the specifics of today, which are very dangerous indeed. But again, the book is COVID-19 and the Agenda is to Come, Red Pilled, and I encourage people to ask for a free ebook copy in different formats or through many distributors now purchase a paperback, or again, I sell it in bulk myself at discounted rates.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. This has been a really a very good program. 3 hours of information. So I'm grateful for the guests that I've had on. It's been terrific. I'm not going anywhere. I'm just, this isn't a goodbye speech or anything. I'm dedicated. Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, James. Take care. Alrighty, take care, listeners. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you, Dana, and thank you to the audience.
Thank you, James, and thank you, Greg. Alright, bye-bye.